Born in the grip of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. But when I'm attacked, I protect and defend. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free.
Good day, everyone. Hope you're having a wonderful week, and unfortunately, the news has been just incredible if you actually listen to the real news. And I am very, very concerned about what is going on as I see more and more and more anti-Semitism, and being Jewish, that strikes a nerve with me, because I see a lot of the same things that happened in the past just recreating themselves and happening again. And this is one of the reasons why learning history is so important. If we don't know our history, we are doomed to repeat it. And believe me, the 1940s and 30s are something that I hope we never repeat. Unfortunately, it looks like we're headed in that direction. Teaching our children and learning the true history of the events that have happened don't help anybody when it's hidden. It has to be out there. Our children have to know. Otherwise, they will be liable to repeating the same thing over and over again. And that's never a good thing. We want to take from our history. We want to take from the good. We want to take from the things that we have done and emulate them, do them over and over again because they were good. They benefited everyone. But when we take from the bad, which is what we are doing now through this critical race theory segregation, which is really what it is, we're going backwards. We're not going forwards. This is Karen Schoen. You're listening to the Prism of America's Education. And today we are really fortunate to have a good friend, Lori Cordoza Moore, who is the CEO head of Proclaiming Justice to the Nations, an unusual title for a very unusual lady who has taken it upon herself to spread the word of the true meaning of what has happened with the Holocaust. Why do I focus on our history so much? Because I am so afraid that we are doomed to repeat it, what we do not know. And that has happened in the past. We have repeated that exactly when we don't know what's going on. And because our media is so corrupt and they are keeping us in the dark, they only filter out the information that they want us to have, one-sided information. They want everyone to think the same way, be the same way, do the same thing. It doesn't work that way. Human beings are not like that. And one of the things that is so important as a Jewish American, or I should say as an American Jew, and that's also part of the problem where we are phrasing ourselves wrong. We should be Americans first, but that's a story for another day. But as an American Jew, one of my fears is that the Holocaust is something that will not be remembered. And I see segregation coming up. We are going backwards. I see it in everything that we're doing. And it's horrible. It's frightening. And worse than that, it's what we're teaching our kids. And Lori Cordoza Moore, my guest for today, wonderful lady, good friend, has taken it upon herself to make sure that the correct Holocaust education is shown, and that the correct Holocaust education is what we tell our children and ourselves, because a lot of us don't even know about it in any event. Lori, you have been helping the governor and the Department of Education in the state of Florida to bring that education forward, and I know that it is your mission. So I'd like you to please share with everyone a little bit about how you got started on this amazing mission and some of the things that you have been doing.
Karen, thank you for having me back on the program. And yes, this is a very important issue. It's very near and dear to my heart. And as you mentioned, as the head of Proclaiming Justice to the Nations, our mission is to educate Christians about their biblical responsibility to stand with our Jewish brethren and defend the state of Israel against the rise of global anti-Semitism. And we accomplish that mission by producing award-winning documentaries and television programs that are broadcast on networks around the globe. We have our media on our website, so anybody can access any of our media at any time. And then we also have a PJTN TV YouTube page where people can also stay informed. But the reason why, Karen, I started this organization, I really felt impressed by the Lord. As you know, as women of faith, this is what drives everything that we do. We are commanded by Almighty God in His Bible to pursue justice, justice, justice thou must pursue. And what happened to the Jews with the rise of the Nazis was unjust. And it happened under the watchful eye in a Judeo-Christian nation. Germany at the time was comprised of Christians and Jews, Protestants and Catholics. So you have to ask yourself the question, how could 6 million Jews and another 5.5 million others be slaughtered? And the community, the local communities turn a blind eye because these camps, these killing camps were in communities. They were not far from where people were living in houses and had farms. And so we heard coming out of Nazi Germany after the liberation that the Germans said they didn't know what was going on. They did know what was going on. They wanted to ignore it. They didn't want to look at it. Even the crematoriums that were in close proximity to communities, you couldn't avoid the ashes that were falling out of the sky. You couldn't avoid the stench in the air. And I'm going to go on that March of the Living one day, Karen, but I have heard that the smell, the odor in the air, it's unbelievable.
Well, that would not surprise me at all. And I don't think people realized when visitors went to Germany before the Second World War, and they came to a town, what they actually saw was a stage that almost like a play stage. It was staged so that they only got to see parts of the community that they were directed and allowed to go and see. They were never allowed to go beyond a certain point, because if they did, they would discover down the road are those crematoriums or those death camps. And it's also important, I want people to understand that this was not a new thing. There is a lot of history behind what went on in the Holocaust, but this is what happens when you teach people that they are victims, and therefore you have to have oppressors. You can't have a victim unless you have an oppressor. Mm-hmm. And what we have today, the white people are being deemed just like the Jews were at that time. They have become the oppressor of the left, and we are putting the same kind of stigma on white people that we did on the Jews in Germany. This is why learning this is so important, that we understand the human being can be the cruelest to another human being. And that's why it's so important that we teach our children morality and to believe in God, because that morality and that belief allows them to stop and say, no, wait a minute, this is wrong, and I'm not going to do it. And right now, do you feel today, Lori, can you feel anti-Semitism, as we say, in the air? Because I certainly feel it.
Absolutely. It's unbelievable. I never anticipated when I started this organization with this mission that we would see the level of anti-Semitism and hatred of the Jews like we are seeing. I knew it was coming, Karen, because the very fact that, you know, I felt impressed by Almighty God to start this organization, I knew that if he's impressing this upon me, then it's coming. And so we needed to prepare and educate Christians before it started to erupt, which we did. And now we're seeing it erupt on an exponential level. And, you know, what you just said about education, we have to be informed and educate, because today the left is using the same strategy. And I'm talking about the progressive left globalists that want to transform America, just like Obama said. They literally are doing that. They're using the same strategy that the Nazis used in Germany, but now they're turning it on the whites. And when I say whites, I mean Christians and I mean Jews and anybody else who has whatever religion you come from. If your skin is white, you are being targeted. And we saw this even with the Nazis. You know, I want to talk about the education, because we talked about teaching our children. And I want to first commend Governor DeSantis in Florida for taking on this issue. This is the most important issue that we can address in our lifetime. We are watching our schools being inundated with anti-Semitic and racist curriculum, like Black Lives Matter, like 1619 Project, like the critical race theory. All of this is just like what happened to the young people, to the youth in Nazi Germany. There was a time when the Nazis used education and youth programs to indoctrinate the young people to its Nazi ideology. And now we are witnessing that same strategy, teaching our kids to hate America, teaching our kids to hate the white man, teaching our kids to act violently. Look at what happened. All we have to do is look at the parallels of what happened in Nazi Germany and what's happening today. It is the same strategy. We are a Judeo-Christian nation. And that means, like Alexis de Tocqueville, our faith is what guides our principles. It has from our very founding, from the time that Jews and Christians were involved in establishing this country, just like in the American Revolution. This is a Judeo-Christian nation. But now what our children are being taught is that we were evil people. We are still evil people. We are inherently racist. There is systemic racism. I want to see the evidence of that systemic racism. We didn't have systemic racism until then President Barack Hussein Obama told us that we did. We didn't have a problem with racism. Are there people that are racist? You better believe it. But systemic racism in the United States of America? Absolutely not. We study the Holocaust, so we learn from the past.
You're so right. And one of the other things is that these people, what they are doing is they paint everybody with the same broad brush. So if you do something, you find someone that does something wrong, all of a sudden, it's not that white person, it's not that black person, it's not that Hispanic person, it's all the Jews, all the Christians, all the white people, all the blacks are oppressed, all the minorities are oppressed. It's always the white person's fault. And they will do this and blow up. Not that one death is insignificant, one death should never happen, but what they do is they will blow it up out of proportion just for the hype, so that they can get the people who have nothing to do, sadly, don't work, sadly, mostly white, sadly, privileged, sadly, are creating this rift. Why are they doing it? I believe they're doing it because this is what they are taught in school. And this is what Action Civics is all about. Not only do they have a class called Action Civics, but the kids are now getting credit for it. So they are getting credit to go into a community, riot, and destroy a community. You were studying textbooks, Lori. You were doing a deep dive into the way the textbooks were explaining the Holocaust. Can you share some of the things that you found?
Well, what really started our involvement with the textbooks and reviewing them came out of a Pearson published textbook. And it was an anti-Semitic quote. And then there was an anti-Israel quote. But the anti-Semitic quote basically stated that Palestinians, that it was okay, that author of this textbook believed that it was okay for Palestinians to launch a terrorist attack on a Sparrow Pizzeria restaurant in Jerusalem because they were waging a war against Israeli government policies and army actions. So here we are, we're allowing, Pearson believes that it's okay to put this information in a textbook with young impressionable, now this was a high school textbook, with young impressionable individuals to try to sway their perspective, these young people's perspective of the Arab-Israeli conflict. There was no picture in the textbook to show the carnage because the quote basically was legitimizing that attack at the Sparrow Pizzeria that launched the second intifada in Israel. Had there been a picture for the kids to see the visual of the carnage that was left behind from that quote that was being legitimized in this textbook, our children would have had a different perspective, but they don't put those images in there because then they would have seen the fallout of this terrorist, this young terrorist who blew himself up in that restaurant to kill all of those people. And then the other quote that I found was accusing Israel of occupying Palestinian land when it should not be called occupy. The term should be disputed. That would have been the accurate statement to make. But because they use terms like occupy, it sounds like they're squatters, that the Jews are squatting and squatters on Palestinian or Arab land. That can't be further from the truth because those of us of faith also know that there was a land called Israel that was given to a specific people. That land belonged to the Jews, to all 12 tribes of Israel. And that territory, Jerusalem, happens to be part of that territory.
This is so important that our children learn the truth. That's the biggest issue, because they are using the same words that they use to describe America. And instead of telling our children that in a war, America goes in, does what they need, comes back out, leaves the country in the hands of the citizens of that country and doesn't stay there and occupy that territory and try to take it over, which is what colonialization is all about, they're certainly not telling the truth. The other not truth is that when the Muslims occupied, quote, Palestine, which was never a land, Palestine was never a land. There was no such things as Palestinians the way they are described today. It is absolutely not true. This is what happens when you use words, very descriptive words, to guide someone else into thinking and believing some particular way is happening. What's not being told is that the land that was occupied by Israel, the land that Israel is disputing, they built up. They created beautiful cities and homes for their people to live. And when you go and look at the Palestinian side, these people are living in tents and squalor because all the money that they're getting is going towards ammunition and guns. And in Israel, the land, the money that they're getting is going towards building up the country. What is better for the citizens, buying guns, more guns, or actually building up and taking care of your citizens? Because most rulers really don't understand that if their citizens are happy and healthy and working and prosperous, it means more for them. But they don't look at it that way. They look at it as we want to kill the Jews or because they are the problem for our plight, instead of looking in the mirror and saying, what can we do to fix our plight? There's a word, an acronym that goes floating around, and it's called BDS. And I would like you to describe that to our audience, because I don't think many people understand or know what BDS is, or that the squad in our own government is pushing this theory.
Yes, well, the BDS stands for Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Movement, and it's targeted toward Israel. And also, it's targeted toward the Jews, because the Jews are the problem, because they actually believe that this land belongs to them. And so if the Jews would just give up this territory, there wouldn't be a problem. So what do these organizations and governments and businesses do? They boycott Israeli products. Keep in mind, these products are manufactured in Israel. A large percentage of the employee base in Israel who create these products are Arabs. So when they want to boycott Israel, they're not just boycotting Israel or an Israeli-owned company. They're actually boycotting and hurting the very people who are employed, who receive money for their livelihood to take care of their families. But we don't hear that. We hear divestment. They want to divest from companies who do business with Israel. They want to sanction Israel on the world stage at the United Nations because Israel supposedly, again, is an occupying force. This is anti-Semitic, is suggesting that Israel has no right to be in this land, in this region. And so we see this movement with the BDS movement. It came out of Durban back 20 years ago, actually this year. In fact, Karen, we're going to be hosting a video conference about this topic and taking back the narrative but the mainstream media doesn't cover this. South Africa has said its leadership. Now, there are some who are anti-Semites who believe this BDS garbage, but there have been leaders within South Africa. There are pastors in South Africa who say Israel is not an apartheid state. We know what apartheid looks like. By making such a statement, it destroys the memory of apartheid. We produced a documentary on this topic. And of course, it can be found on our website at pjtn.org. The documentary about Israel Indivisible, which is also on our website, that gives the historical, archaeological, legal, and biblical evidence to Israel's rights to her land. So these people who push this BDS narrative, it's all based on a false premise. It's not true. That's why media is so important. That's why we have to get our message out. We don't need the mainstream media to push that. All we need is media to the largest number of people on the planet. And who are they? They're Christians. Because if we can give the Christians the truth, they are the majority in the Western countries. They are the ones that can make the difference. And that's why we target this important demographic. And we target them according to their faith and what the Bible says. We'll have people that are loyal and committed to this movement to stand up for justice.
And also understand that targeting the Jews, sadly, is nothing new. But what comes after that? If you think that they're going to stop at the Jews, that's not going to happen. If they have on their target, white people are domestic terrorists, and our administration of criminals, especially our attorney general, feels that the insurrection at the Capitol, even though nobody was killed, nobody brought guns, and we are now finding that the Capitol Police allowed the people to come into the Capitol. There's a lot more to that than meets the eye. But what has happened is that if you look at our legislature, they are divided. The Democrat Party is divided. It seems to me, Lori, anti-Semitism and the anti-Americanism of the smaller faction of the Democrat Party has taken over the Democrat Party. There is no more Democrat liberal party that we used to know anymore. Now it's a bunch of radical lunatics who are in this not because they want to help the Palestinians, not because they want to help the Arabs in that area. No, because they want money, power, and control for themselves. This has nothing to do with helping people. What do you think, Laura?
Right. They're radical racists, radical leftists, radical anti-Semites. And we just saw another incident where Ilhan Omar, again, had to put her 2 cents worth out there and call out the Jews in Israel and blame them again for what's going on in the Middle East. And of course, when she was condemned, she accused America and Israel of being like a terrorist, like the Taliban. And several, I think it was 12 Democrats actually who were Jews in Congress called for her to apologize. And Nancy Pelosi, again, with the milquetoast response to her, did not censure her. She needs to be, not only does she need to be removed from the committee that she sits on because of the intelligence that she now has access to, that she can share with the Muslim Brotherhood because she is a collaborator and an enabler, because she's out there raising funds for organizations like CARE, a Muslim Brotherhood front group. The woman needs to be removed. She needs to be brought up on charges of treason for her activity. Her activity is treasonous. It's trying to destroy America, and she is helping to raise money for the enemy of the United States and of Israel.
Lori, we only have a few minutes left, and I wanted everybody, first of all, I want you to tell them where they can find you. But what do you think the people should be doing? What can we, me as an individual, I'm listening to this show, I'm listening to you, I'm going, yes, this is so important. What do you want me to do? What can I do?
First of all, I want to tell your audience, do not feel overwhelmed. Everybody feels like, you know, coming out of this COVID, this China virus, coming out of this mass mandate, thank God again for Governor DeSantis and how he handled it. But the first thing is first, don't feel overwhelmed. There are plenty of people on the federal level who are trying to preserve and protect our country. We have to fight the battle in our neighborhoods. That is where the rubber meets the road. We have to make sure that our school boards, and if we only start at the school boards, and I encourage everybody to get involved in local politics all the way up to your state legislature, because the state legislature is our firewall of protection against a tyrannical federal government. But even a step removed from the state legislature is your local government body, starting with the school board, because the school board holds the key to the future of our country, because they have the minds of our children. They have education. And we educate our children to become good citizens. And so thank God for the civics in Florida. That's where people need to start. You need to find out what your children are learning in the classroom. Ask your child questions. Look at the content that they're being taught. Go to school board meetings. Listen to the conversation. Go to the school board work sessions. That's the most important thing. Study the website, the school board website. Study the policies. Study their rules. Understand how to get into the game and have a voice. The first thing, first and foremost, you must be educated about what is happening in your neighborhood, because it is happening in every school district across this country. Do not think because you live in a rural area or you think you live in a conservative area that you and your children are safe. They are not. We thought that in Williamson County, which is the belt buckle of the Bible Belt, one of the top 10 wealthiest conservative Republican communities. And we have been infiltrated there as well.
The most important thing that we have to remember is that we can no longer remain silent. And that has been our biggest problem as we became the silent majority. We have to understand there are more Americans who love America than there are Americans who hate America. And once we understand that, it makes it easier to corral the people and teach them the truth. And even if it means starting a small group in your community of people who get together, have a lunch, have a coffee, and talk about what's going on in your community. But in our own community, these are things that we can change, and we can make sure that hatred of country, of family, of God is never part of our educational process. Lori, I want to thank you very much for joining me today. As always, it is such a pleasure to talk to you and to understand how many people there are that view this as a real serious problem and do not want to see the Jews or the white people being ostracized, either due to their religion or due to their color. So Lori, tell everyone where they can find you, and thank you for joining me today.
Absolutely, Karen. Thank you again for hosting me. And As always, you can find us and find more information about us on PJTN, our website, pjtn.org. I am on social media, so look for us there and stay informed.
You're doing Don't Go Away, folks. You're listening to Karen Schoen with the Prism of America's Education, and we will be right back.
Because of COVID-19, the average American worries about their immune health 4 times a day. That's 112 times per year. To minimize the worries, leading nutritional supplement company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost, an immune supplement that contains 15 full doses of science-backed nutrients like vitamin C, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea, all in a one-a-day pill-free gel pack. It tastes great, is convenient on the go, and it's more natural too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Supporting a strong and resilient immune system can be simple. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Immune Super Boost. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
It was a vision that gave birth to a unique multimedia platform that would combine classic talk radio, great writers, and memorable podcasts and videos. AmericaOutloud.com is a conservative leader in a field that is predominantly run by far-left progressive globalists. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Karen Schoen. You're listening to the Prism of America's Education, and I have a treat. Remember, I tell you, I'm a teacher. You get homework. Well, it's time that we started doing that, and our homework has to be the overseers and the activists that expose the lies that these horrific programs are instilling upon our children. And I met two wonderful ladies over the course of my career, and they have done amazing things. I have invited them on the show today, Dr. Karen Heltz and Susan Neal, and what they have done in Indian River County to, and this is in Florida, to bring to the forefront what all of this is about, and to show their school boards what they have been doing and what they have been buying into has been astounding. So I say that these are two ordinary Americans, just like all of us, who have taken it upon themselves to do extraordinary things by going forward and telling the school boards, wait a minute, you're not going to teach that to our children. Susan, you started this movement, and you started this activism, going to the school boards, writing letters to the superintendent. Can you share with everyone what motivated you and how you got started?
Well, this one portion that we're dealing with right now, I got started, but there, I just have to remind everyone that there are a few other people out there who we discovered have been monitoring the school board for a long time. We just didn't know they were there. And there are parents that have been out there also trying to affect change in this whole mask area and the whole COVID stuff. So we've joined forces with some of those people. But what happened to me specifically is that someone sent me an email with a posting of a job description. It was from our school board, school district, and it was for a chief diversity and equity officer to the tune of over $100,000 a year salary. And if you knew Indian River County, you would know that this is a very high salary for our county. And it seemed the whole equity diversity thing was starting to ramp up in the media and the whole critical race theory. And I took one look at that and I said, no, we won't accept this. You can't just go and hire somebody at this kind of salary with our tax dollars. And the description was just outrageous. I mean, it was buzzword and phrase after one after another. And the first thing I did was I asked them to explain what these things meant and how you could evaluate a person on whether they accomplished it or not. And not one school board member got back to me and said, oh, well, this is what it means. And the first comment I got from our superintendent was, equity is complex. That was it. And so I took this information, started researching all of these buzzwords. I wrote an email and I sent it to a list of 800 people. And this was a list that I had gotten back in my train fighting days from someone. And I knew it had 800 probably conservative or relatively conservative people on it, because that had something to do with who, quote unquote, loaned it to me. I had never used it before, but I decided that this was the time to use this list. And I don't like writing things to people who are strangers, but I said, this is far too important. And I sent it out. And then I wrote a letter to the editor. And wow, Karen, I don't know. Did you come through that? I forget now. Maybe it was through Laura. A number of people contacted me and continued to say, what can I do? What can I do? And they were retired teachers, a good friend who's also an attorney. It just kind of coalesced and it came together and one person brought another. And people who are in other organizations like Defend Florida, I think it is, and also Moms for Liberty, they started coming in. So we have a core group of about, I'd say, 15 people. They're the ones that are making this happen.
Well, that's usually always the way. So don't get discouraged, folks. That's what this is all about. You could have a room full of people and they will all tell you what a wonderful job you're doing after you speak. And then they will go home and do nothing. That's human nature. Nothing you can do about it. But you will always find those people who rise to the top, and they, like Susan and Dr. Karen, become the leaders. I became aware of this, Susan, when I got an email from you talking about what you had sent to the superintendent about this new position, which is nothing more than a position that will teach our children to segregate themselves, because this critical race theory is teaching our children that white people are evil and they are the oppressors and that the minorities are the oppressed. When our kids are in kindergarten, this is the last thing that they think about. They don't care about this unless you feed it to them and you continually put those thoughts in their head. This is the last thing they want. They don't see color when they want to play with somebody. They just want to play and have a good time. And they should be learning while doing that, not learning that the person that they're playing with is either a victim or an oppressor. It is a horrible thing what we are doing to our children. Dr. Karen, how did you get involved in working with Susan in Indian River?
Well, it's interesting because Susan and I actually got the same email. She may not know that, but I got the same email about this position. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, excuse me, what are we doing here? And then, of course, you know, as Susan previously mentioned, looking at the salary for that, you know, hiring more people to support that director position, because it's a director position. So anyway, that's what got me rolling. And I started posting it on Facebook, because I participate in Facebook. And I belong to probably about a dozen or roughly about a dozen either education or political groups and stuff. And a lot of them are here in the area. Some of them are in other states. And so I just started, you know, posting this stuff. I wrote an op-ed. I got a very condescending email back from the chairman of the school board here in Indian River County. And he proceeded to tell me that unless I have experience and understanding, then I need to be quiet because I don't know what I'm talking about. Thought about it for a couple of days, and then I responded back and I said, excuse me, but with all due respect, you have no idea who I am and you have no idea what experience I bring to the table. And I have been in your shoes before, and I know what you're dealing with. So anyway, that's kind of how it got rolling. And then a mutual acquaintance of Susan's and Susan and myself connected us back in, I want to say, March timeframe, I think it was. And the rest is history.
This is the way activism starts, when a group of people realize that an extreme wrong is being done and they come together to stop it. So, Susan, what did you do after you worked with the superintendent? Did he say, oh, we're not going to do that. We agree with you. We think that what you're saying is absolutely the truth, and we're going to eliminate that position. What did he do?
Actually, I think it was a combination of things. One was the emails I sent and the speaking out of a number of people. We marshaled some troops to go before their school board meetings and speak out against the position. I did put a couple of other letters to the editor in the daily paper. We just started generating buzz. And I believe the facts proved themselves. People realized, despite the way we needed certain aspects of education to change, that this level of position was totally inappropriate for our district. And I should add that we already had an equity director in our district. This was another layer, a senior position layer, to be added on top of that. We got people churning out, and they were turning out, they were emailing the school board, they were calling them. And I do believe that that's what motivated the decision to not hire this person. So we had a small win in this big war. Unfortunately, what's happened since is that they've taken those responsibilities. They've divided them into three lower level positions, and now they're hiring three more new people. And those same phrases and buzzwords are still in those job descriptions. But then we discovered the whole curriculum issue. And so we have shifted to curriculum.
And by whole curriculum, folks, we all know that in Florida, Governor DeSantis has been very vocal. He said no critical race theory in Florida. New standards were written. The Commissioner Corcoran said no critical race theory in Florida. And lo and behold, guess what is in all of the textbooks that the Florida Department of Education approved? Karen, can you tell us what that was all about?
It's called critical race theory. And one of the things that I find interesting that the advocates or the people who want critical race theory in our schools, they talk about how you don't read critical race theory, that, you know, it's not in the textbooks and stuff. And this is where the misinformation is there is a covert, I'll call it covert anyway, terminology or language that is in the textbooks, and it does point directly back to the Marxist theology of critical race theory. You know, the words, as we've talked about, you know, many times in our worlds anyway, it's social and emotional learning, it's equity, it's a culturally responsive teaching, civics engagement or action civics. You know, so some of these things, even though they sound like they may be good ideas or they may be helpful or beneficial to the students, and they're being used for nefarious purposes. They're being used by the people who are pushing this critical race theory concept into the schools for developing children who will become anti-American. They'll be activists for secure all the social ills of the United States. And it's being used to divide and segregate us and put us into groups, put us into the boxes that the theorists think that we should be put in. And this is not what America is about. It's very disturbing. And one of the things also is that, you know, Susan mentioned that this is a war, you know, with regards to there's many issues in this and the wheel is turning. We had the town hall last night here in Indian River County, which I think went very well. A lot of people were informed and became knowledgeable and were not happy about what they were being informed about. But anyway, this wheel is turning, and critical race theory is only one spoke in this wheel. We have many more spokes that are before us. We can see them coming, and we've got to prepare our armor, I guess, for lack of a better term. But anyway, build our armor in order to combat these spokes and try to push this out of the arena.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned action civic. When I hear those words, action civics, I think, oh my goodness, isn't this a wonderful thing? Our children will learn civics. They will learn how our government works. They will learn all of the things that are necessary for them to be a citizen that brings to the table, that gives to America, that enhances, that does great things. That's what I would think action civics is, but that's not what they mean. Susan, do you know what this action civics is all about?
I actually haven't seen that specific term, but I can guess what I think it's about, because one of my discoveries was a book called D is for Democracy. And I originally found it on the Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, or HMH as we call them, website. And it's a part of their teaching materials for kindergartners. And then I found out through our school district that, lo and behold, this book is not one that they considered a part of the review of curriculums, but it was already purchased by our school district through the Department of Education in Tallahassee, because they received CARES Act dollars directly from the Fed for schools, and they've decided to use it on books. Now, the problem is that this book, which is for kindergartners and first graders, talks about the fact that we live in a democracy, and through the alphabet, A is for amendment, F is for founding fathers, and it goes through all of the letters that permeate these letters are children or no, actually adults throughout history petitioning, protesting, carrying signs, and fighting for something. And it describes to kids that this is how you participate in a democracy. It never mentions republic. And the worst of it is Y can be for you and me. And in Y, it talks about the fact that this gal 20 years ago, this young girl who was 9 years old at the time, her sister died because they found out they were living on the top of a corporate toxic waste dump. And this inspired this young girl to start an environmental organization. And I thought to myself, kindergartners are going to hear about toxic waste and children dying. And what are they going to get out of that? It is abuse in my mind to have a book that's trying to inspire kids to become civically active by protesting because of the death of a child. So I'm just outraged by a lot of what we're seeing. And I'm guessing that that's their action civics.
You're absolutely right. And what they are training our children to do is to become activists. Now, that would be a good thing if they were in high school and had already learned all about America and what America was about and why people protested. But notice, they never tell you the results of those protests. So all these kids are learning is that if you want something, protest it. They don't talk about the consequences of the protest.
They're also learning that, or they're learning it at a time when they have no foundation to know whether what they're protesting against is actually accurate or not. Or is in the, I mean, this girl was protesting environmental safety and she was 9 years old. What does she know about environmental safety?
Well, the fact that she was protesting environmental safety may have been a good thing, but my question is, can she read? Can she write? Can she do math? What are the actual goals of our schools? And they are not being followed when we are taking kids and we are giving them a small portion of something and then telling them to act upon that belief when that belief may not even be correct. The educators, they use what they call experts to describe everything. Let me tell you about these experts. They've been paid. They get government grants and they are basically told, here is what you will come out. Here is what the results of what you're saying, what you're thinking and what you're doing must be in order for you to get this government money. And that's the way grants work. So are they helping our kids? No. And are they training our kids? Yes. And what are they training them to become? Well, think about those peaceful protesters last year that destroyed, and I believe to the tune of about $2 billion with a B dollars of destruction in their, quote, peaceful protest. Where did all these kids come from? Well, many of them are white. They are guilt-ridden because they have been taught that white people are bad, and this is what they must do in order to get them back in the good graces of society. Well, what is the Department of Education think about that? Dr. Karen, I know you went to the last meeting. Can you tell us what the stand of the Department of Education is?
Well, I went to the June 10th, I'm sure you're referring to the June 10th state board meeting in Jacksonville, Florida. They did vote on a rule to eliminate, theoretically, critical race theory, even though I think that, you know, that's a good thing to happen, but it's not legislation. It doesn't have the same teeth that legislation would have. And so therefore, my concern is who's going to be implementing this rule and who's going to be monitoring it and stuff, because implementation is where the rubber meets the road. And if there isn't anyone there to enforce it, to monitor it, to report about it, then teachers and administrators are going to continue with the status quo. And we have decades of teachers and administrators who have been doing the status quo and following the party line, for lack of a better word, what the unions are dictating them to do and stuff. And so I'm very concerned that critical race theory is going to just again be reorganized. It's going to be repackaged. It's going to be rebranded, whatever you want to call it. It's going to continue being a negative force for education for our children in this country.
Okay, we only have a few minutes left. What we'll start off with Susan. What would you suggest that our listeners do? Because I know nothing. I don't know anything about this. I don't have children in school. And why is it important to me? Who cares?
Well, you know, someone asked me that recently. They said just that, why is this important to you at this point in your life? And I've decided that I'm a conservative, patriotic American, and I don't like to see what's happening to our country. And I am really appalled that these changes, these shifts, and these radical ideologies are now being foisted upon our kindergartners and first graders and second graders, because we know the end game here. We know what they want to turn out. We know from in 20 or 30 years when I'm gone, that they will be creating a whole different world. And so for my children's children and great-grandchildren, I mean, for the whole country at large, to me, finding out about this and trying to impact our education system is the most critical thing we can do right now.
I could not agree more. What would you suggest that people do to put a group together to organize? What should they be doing, Susan? What do you think they should be doing?
I think two things about this. One is, first of all, we've always felt that it's easier to organize through existing groups. So if there are conservative groups in your community that already exist, that get together once a month or what have you, try to get people from those groups involved in just listening initially to the message, because you don't want to reinvent the organization wheel. One of the things we keep getting is, are you nonprofit? We aren't anything. We're just a group of people, but we need to combine forces. And the other thing is that this is not a one-time deal. We need people all over this country and all over this state starting to get interested and following the school boards as they go month to month. Because we know, for instance, in our county, they're going to be looking, and all counties in Florida are going to be looking at new curriculums every 6 months to 12 months over the next few years. And we all need to be involved in that. And it's a part of the state statute that the community, not just parents, but the community be involved in those evaluation processes. So we need to start getting involved.
You're absolutely right. And Dr. Karen, I'm afraid to talk to my legislator. What do you think I should be doing? Oh my goodness.
Well, you should talk to your legislator for one thing. Don't be afraid. They're just a person just like you are, just like you and I. I mean, there's several things you can do. You can, first of all, parents have got to get involved. Parents have got to pay attention. And I've said this before, in one respect, COVID has been a godsend to the world of education because it has opened parents' eyes to see what their children are being taught, to listen to some of the lessons, to see the assignments, et cetera, et cetera. Parents, again, parents must need to get involved. Go the homeschool or private school route if you can afford to do that. One of the things that was mentioned that I've heard before and that I've actually recently read on as well is that there are a lot of parents who are going to withhold their children from the first week of school in their states and stuff. And so that's something that you might want to consider as a parent as well. Take a vacation the first week of August or September, whenever, or the first week of when your school starts. Write letters to the editor, make phone calls to not just your elected state representatives, but to your school board and your county commissioners and city council members and stuff. But like Susan said, the best, I think probably other than parent involvement, the other best thing to do is to collaborate with those existing organizations, join forces, work together, find candidates to run against the school board members that you disagree with, and you know, get that conservative value back into our education system.
Well, ladies, I want to thank you for sharing what you have done to help promote America in our schools. This is the most important thing that we can do, is to promote America, family, and God, and our American values, and make sure that our children are instilled with that for the rest of their lives so that they are proud to be Americans, not afraid to be Americans. This is America, these are our children, and we have to fight for them on a continual basis. See you all again next week. Thank you all for listening.
But I'll always stand proud and free. I'm America.